Thank you for the opportunity to be on BBS Radio. I'm Russ Johnson, and this is Lights of the Night, and we are pleased to bring to you a young lady, Sandy Whiteley. She has been abducted and has a serious memory of a lot of things that have gone on in her life and some real strange things, but we will talk about all of that. Sandy, thank you for being on BBS Radio, Lights in the Night. I'm Russ Johnson, obviously, and we talked before, so thank you for being on the show today.
Well, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
Huh, my honor. Listen, in the last couple of shows, I had Jillian Green. Did you hear any programs that we did with her?
Yes, I heard. I heard that show, yes.
Oh, what do you think?
She's got a wealth of information. I really enjoyed it.
Wow. Yeah, she says she's an Anunnaki, been here dozens of times, in and out, and she's getting ready to leave again pretty soon. She's about 85 or so. But I think she says she's
got
to come back for the next 200 or 300 years. So.
Well, that'll be interesting, won't it?
She's committed, I think, to make it happen. Listen, you've been abducted. Let's talk about your abduction and tell us how you know you were abducted and some of the things that happened around those incidents of being abducted. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Well, first of all, I saw my first cigar ship at 3 years old, so I started pretty early. I didn't know what it was, but I sure kept my eyes on it. So when I was 8, it was the night before Valentine's Day, and I think I went to bed around 9 o'clock, and shortly after, my folks were already in bed because they both had to work early. Shortly after, there was some beings in my room, and one came up to my bed with three really long fingers with something on the end of them. And I think that it touched me on the forehead, but I had super long hair. And I was only 8 years old, and I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. The only thing I could move was my eyes. So after remembering those fingers, I went into some kind of a tunnel that, like when you see in the movies, so where it shows a vortex with all the lights, I could actually see lights, hear noises, and my hair went straight up. And I remember looking up into this long tube, whirling tube, and then everything, you know, was blank. They evidently wiped my memory. So I was gone all night, and I got back about 6 in the morning, and I was so traumatized that I couldn't speak. I couldn't move in my bed. I came back through that tube the same way that I had went, and I remember being kind of placed in my bed, you know, with the covers, and then they backed out of the room. But my folks got up, and it was Valentine's Day, and I couldn't even speak at the breakfast table. How I went to school, I honestly don't know. They wiped my memory pretty good, but I remembered going, and I remembered coming. And I spent the day, but I never told anybody because, you know, in those days, you just didn't hear about things like that, and I honestly didn't even know what I would tell. It was such a strange experience. I didn't know what I would tell, but I knew that I was absolutely terrified. I could never sleep in my room again without the door open and a light on. I always had the feeling that something was right outside my bedroom window, and if I looked, I could see the shadow of small ships, and it was always like there were things looking in my bedroom window. But I never did tell anybody about it. So that started a whole lifetime of really interesting things going on. But from that day forward, I always saw things in the sky, and I would get up in the middle of the night and just sit in my dad's rocking chair and look out the front window, watching for ships or, you know, whatever would go by. And then I'd have to go to school, and I was so tired because I spent half the night up. But it started a long process of really strange events.
Well, that was that. But so you're frightened, but you're afraid, I guess. And we're talking about, what, 60 years ago, 70 years ago, if that happened?
It was 1956.
That's
2 years
days.
Before Barney and Betty.
That was a couple days ago. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, it's just as fresh in my mind today as it was then. It's pretty traumatizing.
Huh. And you never, ever, ever mentioned that again to anyone for many years?
No. No, not till I'd been married quite a while.
Okay. Initially, when you met your husband, you didn't give him that information, huh?
No, but my first boyfriend at 16 handed me a book full of hieroglyphic writings and actually took me to a craft that was landed, but we all got so afraid we ran off. So that was rather strange. My very first boyfriend, and he saw ships all the time, too.
Wow.
Now, if anybody knows our location, we were on the back side of Mount Rainier, probably maybe 100 miles as a crow flies. So there was just constantly just ships all the time.
You know, it's generally said, you know, when you look at the books, Abduction and Communion and Fire in the Sky and the Fourth Kind, on and on and on, a lot of motion pictures out there, as you already know, and you mentioned Betty and Barney Hill. I guess a lot of people listening to us really don't know about Betty and Barney Hill of 1961, because they were a couple driving along the highway. You tell us this story. Talk about that, because I can remember looking at the Life magazine of 1961 or somewhere in that arena, where they had their pictures on the front page of that magazine. Why was that so important? Why was that so unpopular? Why did that make the media all around the world? Why that abduction piece?
Well, obviously, I've paid attention to this stuff for a lot of years, and the only thing I can think of with Betty and Barney Hill was that they were both professionals, and they were the first two people to kind of give credibility to being abducted. It isn't something they were making up, and they were, like me, they were so traumatized, and people believed them. And up till then, I don't think people actually believed. So they kind of put all this on the map to where people might, you know, they wanted to consider that this was a possibility.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. But a lot of people were abducted before them. I mean, the estimate that I got of abductions in the United States alone is about 8 million people have been abducted. For those people who may have been abducted but don't remember anything, how can they bring that to the level of consciousness, if you will, from time to time? Is it possible?
Well, yeah, I think hypnosis maybe, but I'll tell you, that was part of the bargain they made with the government, was to wipe the memories. Everybody that got abducted was to be on a list. The government was supposed to know. And you know how some of those beings are. They didn't keep their word, and they just started kind of going crazy, abducting here and there and way more people than they said they were going to. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It just turned into a whole other ball game.
Yeah, I guess for those people who, I think they made a motion picture of Betty and Barney Hill, and they an incident at Exeter, I think, by John G. Fuller. I think that was in September 3rd of 1965, and I think he put that out. Did you ever watch that motion picture?
Yeah, I've seen quite a bit on both of them, and I think it's the niece. She still has Betty's dress. And she's given a lot more detail over the years, you know, to how they felt and, you know, how people believed them. And, you know, for a while there, everybody would laugh at you. I think that's probably why most people they don't tell and they don't talk about it. More so nowadays than it used to be. But you still get laughed at and people still think you're crazy. But that's part of, that's what they want. You know, obviously they would like to take you and bring you back and erase your memory without you causing a problem.
Right.
But a lot of people do remember, you know, I remember bits and pieces, and that's certainly, I've been abducted other times after that, but they're really good at wiping your memory. And I try so hard to remember things, and then things will just pop in your mind, little bits and pieces, but not the full picture.
All right, so how many, let me turn this on, how many times do you think you've been abducted?
Well, I've been told that I'm in the breeding program, which was on Mount Rainier. And so, literally, from what I've heard, they can take me anytime they want.
Okay. You think because you made an agreement when you were younger that happens over and over again?
That's very likely. And like you and I had discussed before, I have, I'm physiologically different than most people. I have super strength at times, unbelievable strength. My pulse is very low. My body temperature runs around 94. I'm just different than other people. When I went to a sports doctor from jumping off a 14-foot ladder, he called me an elite athlete because I jumped off the ladder and just kept walking. And I just do some really strange things that most people can't do. So I think that I probably am a hybrid and probably have mixed DNA. And that's what they're looking for. They want to take people where they can take your DNA, you know, and mix it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm pretty sure that's why they came after me.
Wow. The thinking, though, among a lot of people who do research, Linda Mutenhall, Laura Eisenhower, the great-great-granddaughter of President Eisenhower, and, you know, Coy Good, David Wilcock, many others. They say that they will, when you make that agreement, they will come and get you over and over and over and over again, right?
Oh, sure. I believe it.
For the rest of your life.
Yeah, pretty much. If they have a need for you, obviously if you didn't offer anything, they wouldn't be doing it. But if they have a need for you, then they're going to use you till they don't need you anymore.
Okay, you mentioned a breeding program. Explain that. What do you mean by a breeding program? I mean, it's obvious, I guess, to most people listening, but I want you to explain to us what you mean by you were probably in a breeding program.
Well, the only thing that I have learned about that is that there's two reasons for doing it. They may take you to get your DNA because you have qualities that other people don't have, and they want that. Or you're in the actual breeding program of where they take you, they mix, and you have hybrid children. There's that part of it, too. And, you know, like probably others that you've talked to, they're taken back to the ship to see their little children that are born. And so I don't know. My memory's not really good on that. But I just know that I've been told by several other people that they can take me anytime.
Okay. When you mentioned hybrid children, there's a website, hybridchildrencommunity.com.
Right.
Have you been there?
Right. Yes, I have.
Right. And so that young lady, Brenda, I can't think of her name, but anyway, she says that, and I'm encouraging everybody to go to that website because she explains what her duties and responsibilities are with respect to the children that have been created on these various spaceships after they have been abducted. And they are coming back to mix with us, the rest of us, here on Earth, in many respects.
Yeah.
Do you have any ideas about why that's happened and what they hope to accomplish by doing that, mixing that?
Well, I've heard several theories on that. One is that they want to, that their DNA was weakened, so they wanted a stronger DNA to mix with theirs to keep the race alive. the dark side of it is they could want to come and place beings all over the earth if they planned on replacing the population or whatever. I mean, you know, the dark side, they have all kinds of plans. Now, how many they're going to get to accomplish, we'll have to wait and see, but they're always up to something. I know, I've encountered them plenty.
Wow. So, did you give me a number about how many times you think you might have been abducted?
Oh, I would think quite a bit.
Okay, 10, 20?
I don't know a number exactly.
Right, and you don't remember...
But I have...
All the abductions, you remember some?
Bits and pieces, yeah. Now, they've done a pretty good job wiping my memory.
Well, all of us, are you kidding? You remember,
yeah.
Even the things that you remember, I don't remember. But anyway, I understand that most people who I talk to have a problem remembering anything, but they have a... For those people who have been abducted, what kind of clues, in spite of the erasing of memory, would they have? Anything they could identify?
You know, one thing I notice that they do, and this is pretty frequent, I think a lot of times you might go into what you'll call sleep paralysis when you're actually wide awake but you can't move. Now, I've been told that that is often how they'll take you in between, and it'll happen so fast that you won't realize it during periods of sleep paralysis. And then, of course, I know they take me at night because some days I'll come back and I'll just be so exhausted from whatever I had to do at night. And I remember myself being on the ship with my hair pulled back into kind of a bun with a uniform on, looking out, you know, the portholes, because I have some kind of a job on one of the ships. But they don't even let me know what my job is. I just know I see the uniform and I see me doing something, but I don't really know quite, you know, quite sure what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, to dredge up the real memory of what happened, would that be more frightening than not to know would be better than knowing? Would you say that in some instances? Or do you think that's the case?
Yeah, I really believe that's the main reason. I was so traumatized, even though I couldn't remember, I was so traumatized that it ruined my life. It took me years to get over that, if I even ever got over it. I was so afraid. I spent all my time watching the sky, looking for ships. I had beings coming through my front window glass and walking out the walls, great big pictures on the bedroom walls at night that would wake me up, noises, people talking, portals opening. I had a portal in my last house. Two little chihuahuas, and I'd play ball with them, and it was right outside my office, and I knew it came and went, you know. So we threw a ball, went right out into the portal and disappeared, and it never did come back. And then the portal sealed up. Well, this happened 3 or 4 times, and I was really careful because I thought, well, if I go in there, I'll never be able to come back. And the last time they threw the ball back, so 3 out of 4 times, you know, they didn't, and then the very last time they threw the ball back. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Now, they say, and I got a lot of books here about different kinds of aliens. I mean, somebody said, instead of just one, you know, we talk about the greys or the reptilians or whatever, whomever, or the tall whites, but they about, from what I gather in my research, because I'm always doing some research, they about 50, 60, 70 different species on the planet Earth. Do you recognize?
Yeah, I think
any
more
of them?
Than that. Yeah.
More than that? Okay. Yeah.
I think more than
people,
that.
Maybe more than that, yeah. A lot of people just don't understand that there are so many coming to planet Earth, and why? Why would you think, well, the breeding program you mentioned,
this planet Earth, I think it's a test planet. I think it was such a beautiful planet that beings from all over stopped by. And, of course, we know the story, like she told on the last show, of how everything is supposed to have taken place. I mean, you look out at the universe, all these beautiful planets and galaxies. It's to think that we would be the only one, that's ludicrous. There's just civilizations everywhere. But I do believe that this Earth is a special place, has a special plan, and we all agreed to come here. I have to ask myself why I did, because it's really been difficult for me. I never fit in anywhere. I just didn't fit in with men or women or anything. I did fit in with animals, you know, and like I told you, I had a pet moth that followed me to school. But I did never fit in on this planet, so it makes it so difficult to be here. So if there's anybody that, you know, that's kind of like in the position I'm at, you get really kind of lonesome because you're all by yourself. Nobody understands.
Well, yeah, true. You do feel kind of alone, but obviously you had a couple children since you've been here.
I have three kids.
Three kids.
And they call me the resident alien.
I see. Do you think they have been abducted?
No, but I know that they have enough of my DNA that they are able to see. See, because I can see ships almost every night. My kids are able to see a few of the things that I see once in a while. They don't have never had the experiences. They don't have the super strength. But they do have some of my DNA to where I do see it coming through.
So, do you think you were conceived by aliens or some?
Yeah, alien? I've been told that I was brought here in a ship because I was in a state orphanage until I was about 14 months old, and I was adopted by a genius of a man who had been in three branches of the military. My mom was in banking. And then it took him quite a while to get me. And, you know, I think I was placed, and then I was placed with the right people that would, you know, care for me. Because I was not like a normal child. I mean, I tried to be, but I was different. And then after that experience, I was so frightened all the time that I just clung to the house because I was afraid.
I just want to step back with just a moment. When we talked about Betty and Barney Hill, that incident that happened in September of 1961.
Right.
She remembers being abducted. Barney had a serious problem, and I would ask people to do this as we talk about all of this. Go do your homework on this, kind of look at, and then there are books out there that you can go to Amazon and get, and Alien Abductions, and that's one type of book. But that it's a great story, and it hit the front page of, as I alluded to earlier, it was on the front page of Life magazine in 1961, 62, somewhere around in there. I mean, it was just on the cover. I mean, it was just all over the place. And I'm just wondering why them and not you or somebody else who had been abducted before that time. What do you think?
Well, if anything I've learned, nothing happens by chance. If they were on that cover, there's a reason for it. If they were selected, it's because the beings in charge wanted them to be out. Remember, we're always under disclosure, as you can see going on all the time. A lot of it's phony crap, but we are under disclosure to where bits and pieces are coming out all the time. And someone chose them to do that, and they had a reason for it. Now, I just wasn't selected because they had a different reason for me, and they probably still do. But Betty and Barney Hill were normal people. I'm not. I've never been normal.
Okay.
So that's two different kinds of beings. They're actually just normal people that had something happen. And I haven't had a normal day in my life.
I see. So there's a possibility then, since you were in an orphanage, that you were created and put in the orphanage so that you
can have... That's what I've been told.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think you talked to Q at one point. Could you talk about that conversation with Q?
Well, and
tell us who Q is.
Well, Q's the one that... Well, that's probably for a different show, but I had a brief conversation.
At least open the door.
Oh, I believe Q is a lot like I am, where I think we're both chosen, different type of a hybrid being that have had some kind of a mission that we agreed to, although he's much more intelligent than I am and knows a lot more than I do. But he's the one that asked me, because I told him where I lived, he asked me if I was close to the backside of Mount Rainier. And I said, yes. He says, well, that's why you're in the breeding program. And I said, okay, well, I didn't really realize that. And he also alluded to something about that him and I were doing together and something about a super soldier. Well, I don't know, but I'm the only person I know that can pick up a car and set it up over a cement wall. So it's very likely my DNA is so different that I do things like that, especially if I focus the energy. It's not something I can do all the time, but I am really strong for my age, and I can do some very unusual things.
Well, let's talk about a couple. You say you picked up a car and put it over a cement wall?
Well, I was in Washington State, and it was winter, and there's about 3 feet of snow.
Okay.
And I was in a location where a lady slid on the ice, and her car went up and over a cement wall. And then there was kind of a driveway area underneath it, you know, dropped down a little. So I went around, and I don't know how I did it, but I kind of focused. And I just picked up the front of the car and set it back up over the wall. And she was so thankful because she thought her car wouldn't run. Well, every once in a while I can do something like that, and I don't know how I do it. And like if I'm on a freeway and there's a truck that I can feel is going to hit my car, I just shove it over into another lane. Now, I can't do that all the time. And then one day I was going into a house because the lady knew that I had some implants and she was going to tell me the location. And I was so excited to get in that lady's house that another lady came out the door and my energy threw her right off on her head into the flower bed. And we had to laugh. I didn't do it intentionally, but that's the kind of stuff that happens. There's so much energy, and when it's released, you know, you just don't know quite how you're going to control it.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of stuff I have to put up with.
So you think you were in the super, the secret space program? You were a super soldier?
I am not sure, but I know that Q mentioned, in fact, Billy and Jane did too, that we're doing something. And there's so much going on with these space arcs and this and that everywhere. There's just so many things happening at once that they are probably recruiting different types of people, you know, to help out.
Can you tell us something about the super space program, the secret space program?
No, not too much. I get stuff on a need-to-know basis.
Right.
I'm not really good at all that.
Okay. This is the show I'm doing. This show I'm doing here. I'm not on Gaia or Cosmic Connections or Ancient Aliens, right? I'm just doing this show on BBS Radio, right? And I'm grateful to be here. But so I would call the show UFO UAP 101, the basic stuff.
Yeah.
And the people who have been around researching this for 50, 60, 70, 80 years or more, like Billy Carson and Stephen Grill and Linda Mutenhall and all the other people. I mean, I can go on and on with a lot of names, Hal Puthoff, whatever. But I would say that they have different programs where they take it to another level. But I'm just going back to the basics of it all, right? The stuff that the average person could have known, but they were denied that information, and that's what I want to do. I want to bring that to the fore right now. Later on, I'll bring that, you know, I guess UFO course number 401 or 510 or something like that. But this is 101 or 100, the basic stuff. So,
well, let me remind you of that story that I told you, how they interact with you on the planet. I related this story the last time I spoke with you, and actually I did on Billy and James' show too, but I went camping with my husband and another couple. Leavenworth, Washington, there's a river called the Icicle River, which in the wintertime or in spring runoff, it just boils. And there's a little road that runs up there, and there are camping areas way up in there. Well, we couldn't just go to a close one. We had to go to one way up there in the hills, you know. So a few people showed up there, and we all had a little party. And my husband had way too much to drink, and everybody left. So it left me and him to pack up our truck with the tents and everything, you know, and to go back to our place. And he had a pickup that I didn't know how to drive. It had a steering column shift thing, you know, and I wasn't really used to that. So anyway, we pack up and we start to drive down this road, which is very close to the river. So we stopped a couple places along the way, and I had a threat from some type of a being that said that it was going to kill me. And I thought, oh, and I was so scared, you know. So we got in the truck and we left and got back on that road. But we're right next to that river, and you can look over, and the river's pretty wide, and it was just boiling down that canyon. And all of a sudden, my husband passed out on my shoulder, shoved me into the passenger door, and that truck went out and hung over that river, and the only thing holding were the two back tires on the road. And it hung suspended in the air for at least 5 minutes. And I'm telling you, if I have ever prayed in my life, I was praying. And all of a sudden, something picked that truck up and set it right back on the road. And I was able to get him off of me. I kind of crawled over him. And I got in, you know, behind the steering wheel and tried to drive a truck I didn't know how to drive. And I finally figured it out enough to get going. And I'm just shaking from head to foot. I mean, my hands and my arms, and I was horrified. So I get down to the main highway, and I think, oh, my gosh, I'm safe now, you know. And so I'm heading back into town. All of a sudden, about 3 miles down the road, all four tires lock up. I'm heading straight for a guardrail, and the truck, and I put on the brakes. It comes screeching maybe 2 inches from that guardrail, and I had to walk 2 miles to a house to get someone to come and help me. I'd tell my husband the next day, and he didn't remember any of it. So this is the kind of stuff that I keep to myself because nobody will believe you.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't tell anybody that story, you know, because no one's going to believe something like that. But this is the kind of stuff that would happen to me all the time.
I see.
And this is how, and Billy actually told me that was extraterrestrials.
I see. Okay. And Billy, who is Billy?
Billy and Jane, they're really good friends of mine, yeah. And they have a huge radio show, too.
Of course.
And they is how they interact with you on the planet, too. They do things like that.
I see. I see. Let's look at a couple of things. Did you ever see Communion?
Yeah. Oh, God, I love it. I've got it on the queue right now.
Okay.
Love that
what do you
show.
Love about that motion picture, Communion? People should watch it for those people who don't believe anything we are talking about. Well, that's a true story.
The best
story.
Part of that show is that he had an experience when he was a child, didn't remember it, kind of like, you know, a lot of us. And when he got older, they began to go after him again, and he had the experience, and he didn't believe it because, you know, you're taught not to believe stuff like that. And then when he finally did believe it, then he could deal with it. And he actually went and had someone help, you know, to get the memories back. And then he was at peace with it. Because a lot of those beings are wonderful, and they don't have harm. You know, they don't want to harm you, a lot of them. And there are those that do, but you can tell the difference. But he learned to deal with it, and it was such a wonderful story to give people hope that have had things like that happen that don't have anyone to talk to.
Was that book done by Whitney Strieber?
Yeah, right.
So that's a motion picture. And also you can get his book. Go to Amazon and get his book, the audio.
Yeah, he's got a website. He's got a lot of good stuff. In fact, he's having Linda Moulton Howe on his show, I think, this next week.
Oh, yes. So you know about Linda Moulton Howe. She's been out there about 70 years, since 1979. And she did that. Let's talk about her a minute or two, because I want people to go to her website and let's see what she's been researching for the last 50 years or more. Let's talk about her a bit. Because when you
mentioned a lot of the top people, and each one of them has a wealth of information.
Okay.
Now, how much, you know, of course, the government knows about these people, and some people are allowed to talk, and others, they don't want to talk. So she's been allowed to talk about things, and as has Stephen Greer, and yet other people, if they bring up things that the government doesn't want out there, then they're going to go after them. So she's lucky enough so far that they've kind of left her alone to investigate, and she's allowed to say things. But I'll tell you, you got to be careful what you say, because some of it they like, some of it they don't.
Well, years ago, you're right. But she wasn't read in, as Stephen Greer says. She wasn't Majestic 12. She wasn't part of the Draco or the Illuminati, right?
No, not as far as I know.
Okay.
No, Majestic 12, that's a select bunch. And I believe that they're probably still going.
Of course, big time. I mean, that's why we have the wars. But anyway, we had to do another show on that one. But
yeah.
So they're out there, and they represent the dark side, right? The cabal.
You know what? This whole planet is under the dark side. It has been since day one. We're lucky that we have enough brains that we can choose how we want to exist. We can go along with them.
Let's talk about their
fear trap. Well, that's what they want, is fear. They want everyone to live under fear and control.
Okay.
And I don't choose to live that way. I want to focus on what's going to happen next, the way I want the world to look and the way I want people to behave. And
Can we talk
you
about
know,
that?
The way Source wants us, sure, the way Source wants us to act.
Describe some of those activities for us, please.
Which activities?
I'm sorry?
Describe what?
Describe some of this. You say Q or the sources or Jesus or Krishna or Buddha or Baha'u'llah or Muhammad, whomever. The sources that are on the good side, how do they want us to behave? Could you describe some of that for us?
Okay. I think the Bible said it the best, be of the world, be in the world, but not of the world. Obviously, there's two ways of looking at your life. You can fall down in the pit. You can do all the things that bring you down to a lower vibration, or you can raise your thoughts to more holy things. And when you do that, when you focus on things that are close to Source, you raise your vibration and you provide a light and an attraction that other people will come to you because they're after that light. They want something better in their life. But a lot of people just don't know how to get it. So most people on planet Earth live in fear because that's how they want you to live. They want you to be upset. They want you to lose loved ones. They want you to be broke. And they want you to be miserable all the time. But even in your misery, there are things to be thankful for. And if you just focus on that and you focus on a higher existence, one of these days we're going to get it.
Okay. So there's a battle between the light and the dark side.
Oh, God, yes. And I'll tell you, I have dealt with so many dark entities, but if you raise your vibration and you get as close to Source as you can, they literally have to step back from you because you're not buying into their fear. And believe me, they'll try, just like they tried to get me in that river and many other times. They will try stuff like that, but you don't have to buy into it.
Okay. So when we look at Ephesians 6:12, it says, "For we do not wrestle against the flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the power of darkness." So that's what we're fighting.
Absolutely the way it is. That's absolutely true. You can't see a lot of them. Now, sometimes I can and sometimes I can't. But they're always there. And I'll tell you, when you focus on things that are unholy, they're right there at your shoulder. If you focus on things that are holy, that lift, you know, towards the light, they have to step back. You have to choose how you want to live. Do you want to live with them hounding you all the time? Or do you want to live a life of peace and light and joy? Okay. Everybody has a choice. It's all how you look at it.
Okay. But most of us said the same, and it is what it is. Oh, on the third dimension, if you will, vibratory frequency. Yeah,
that's what it is.
All right, so how do we raise ourselves to the fourth or the fifth or the sixth? How do we get up? How do we move up?
The only way you can do it is to focus on things of the light. You have to quit buying into fear. Fear will drag you down to the lowest possible vibration. And when you're in that vibration, you're attacked. Because that's where those beings live. They can't get above the fourth vibration. So if you can raise yourself up, they can't hurt you.
I see. Okay.
But, you know, how do you go around telling somebody that? It's if they sit down and think about it, they know that everybody has light in them. If they sit down and think about it, and think about the light, and think about the way things really are, you can rise above most of that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Greys, or the Reptilians, or the Nordics, or the Tall Whites. There's some who support us, is that right? Some of the entities that come to the planet, and some who don't.
Well, there's a section of Greys that aren't good, but there's a section that are. Then there's a section of Greys that aren't even real. They're like clones. They're little worker bees. And oftentimes they're the ones that will take people. And then there are Tall Greys, and they often work with reptilians. And, you know, I used to think all of reptilians were bad, but they're not. There are those that raise families and that love, too. But there's a section that are really bad. It's kind of the way it is here on Earth, good ones and bad ones. And you can tell very quickly who does what by what comes out of their mouth and what they do. Do they have good actions? Do they speak things of light? Or are they just dark? And you can tell really quick.
We say reptilians. What do they look like? The reptilians.
The who?
Reptilians.
Oh,
well,
some are horrible. Some have huge, huge tails. Some aren't that bad looking. And they're shapeshifters, so they can look like humans if they want, some of them. It's said that a lot of people on Earth are actually reptilian, and they shapeshift, so that's okay, whatever.
Wow, let me turn on these phones for 1 second. What do you mean by shapeshifting? Describe that for me.
Well,
what do you mean by that?
They can present the appearance of being human, so that you, when you look, you see them as a human, or they can switch back to the, some have more scales than others, but I'll tell you that one that's like 15 feet tall with that tail, those are very scary. It's not fun to encounter something like that, especially if they're on the dark side. But then if it's a reptilian that has your best interests at heart, that's all right. I don't care what they look like as long as they got light in them.
Gillian had said that the reptilians have been here for hundreds of thousands of years.
I think so.
So they said even the galactic command that we all are under, tell the galactic command that this is our planet before you created the human being. Are you of the same mindset? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Go ahead.
Well, all I know is she basically covered it, you know, the last show. that's the same thing that I have heard, that they were here and that different races came. They were harvesting gold because gold is something that you do need in the universe, and that they got really tired of working the gold mine, so they wanted to mix DNA to create workers to harvest the gold. So, I don't know. There's a lot of stories on that, and I'm certainly no expert on it, but I do believe that from day one, the reptiles were here. And, of course, Satan and the Argon Network, you know, they're all these beings are combined for evil. And they kind of all stick themselves together. And then the beings of light, they kind of stick together. It's kind of like the Bible says, you know, there's always a battle for good and evil. Of course, we know the good's going to win, but sure not too fun in the meantime, is it?
So it's a big job, then, you say. We have to concentrate.
It's a big job.
Right.
And each person has a responsibility. We chose to come here. It's our responsibility to shine as much light as we can so that we can all join together and hopefully raise the vibration on this planet to where we can ascend to a better place.
Okay.
Because this year isn't worth it, the third dimension.
Sure. You said about three times in this broadcast that we chose to come here. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that we were a different type of being, and this is well, that's more or less of a prison planet, but we chose to come here on a mission, and we agreed to it, and I think most of us, when we got here, were a little shell-shocked. We didn't expect it to be this bad, and I keep getting updates from all different kinds of beings who congratulate all of us for hanging in here. But it's not easy, as you know. It's not fun. It's not easy. It's not easy to lose people you love and be broke or suffer or have medical conditions, you know, that you have to put up with while you're in the third dimension. So the best thing we can do is try to focus on things that lift our spirits. It's been, like, I lost my husband this year. It's been a really hard year for me. I've got so many things going on in so many areas that I have to sit down and remind myself of the good things and the things that I'm here to do. And it isn't easy, you know.
Okay, so you infer from that statement that we were a spirit, a soul, who decided to incarnate on this dimension on Earth, right, the prison planet, or what, the experimental planet, whatever you want to call it,
right,
to come here and raise the vibration of the planet itself. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Oh.
We came here on a mission to help, to shine our light, to join together, to try to get rid of the dark so that things can be the way that God, Source, the Creator, wants it to be. It's not supposed to be like this. It's so uncomfortable for me because having to battle the dark all the time is exhausting.
Okay. Have you been here before? How are you? Is this your first rodeo?
Well, I must have been here a bunch of times because of my understanding of what's going on. I don't think you get it on the first time.
I see.
I think it takes, you know, a lot of do-overs probably to get yourself to a position to where you really want to be close to your Creator. You want to be like you're supposed to be. You want to be a being of a higher vibration. I can't even deal with the way the dark thinks. It just is so against my grain. But I'm here for a reason, so I'm trying to do the best I can.
Right. So let's assume you stay another 20 years and leave. Would you want to come back?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm ready for one of those ships, the size of that one that was fueling on the sun, to go. I'd love to just see all the different planets and, you know, have more of a, I don't know, help out the Galactic Federation or just something on a little bit different level. You know, you can only be beat up so many times here.
Right, okay. Can you tell us what you mean by Galactic Federation? We have about 5 minutes left. Since this is a basic UFO kind of program, I didn't want people to be lost on the stuff that we were talking about. What do you mean by the Galactic Federation?
Well, there's different federations, but I believe the Galactic Federation of Planets, which has representatives from different worlds, people, beings of light that get together and want to get the dark out of the way so that planets can progress and be like they're supposed to be. You know, we've been doing this battle on this planet a long time. The beings want things to be the way they're supposed to be. They don't want to see mass people, you know, killed and horrible illnesses and all this stuff. That all goes with the dark. It doesn't. Life doesn't have to be that way. It should be the way the Creator intended. Okay. And that's what their mission is to bring all these planets together and all these beings of light, and let's try to figure out a way that everybody can live in peace and harmony and light and, you know, progress the way we're supposed to.
Yeah. I was listening to Gaia the other day, Emerald Smith and Tim. He was talking to, he was in a secret space force. Anyway, excuse me for a second. But anyway, they're talking about the same thing that you had mentioned, that the Galactic Command is meeting, and they have thousands and thousands of entities in the vastness of the universe who come to those massive spaceships and meet and discuss the issues. Do you know anything about
that? Right, they do. Yeah, okay. Yeah, they do. And I think that the dark has tried to infiltrate some of the smaller ones. But, of course, light always wins because light is from the Creator. So even though they might try to infiltrate and cause problems, they're going to catch them and they're going to get back on track. So I know, you know how they are. They get out there in the universe and they want to attack anything they can for their agenda. But that's not the way it's going to turn out. They are going to lose because light always wins. Things that are holy always win over the dark. So that's what I concentrate on every single day. I may get beat up and I have horrible things happen to me and horrible days, but I have to focus on that because that's the end game.
I see. So truth crushed to earth will rise again.
Yeah, I mean, sooner or later, we are going to come into the fifth dimension of where we have peace, and we're going to live and start to live the way it was intended. And okay. People will be happy again. If that's the only hope we have on this earth, you know, think about that. Program for that. Get your light high enough. Imagine the way you would like things to be and how you'd like to see people getting along and just how you'd like to see life in the future. And that raises your light in it, and then you will join with others that have the same vision, and that's how things happen. You got to focus on one of the two. You either focus on the light or you focus on the dark. That's the only two choices you have.
The good or the bad. You can't focus on both, huh?
Good or bad. Good or bad. You got to pick one.
All right. I'm looking at a book called Antarctica's Hidden History. I won't go into it. We only have a couple of minutes left. But Dr. Michael Sellar, of course, he has three books.
One of my favorites.
He's a good book. Talk about him just a minute, because he also has a book called The Galactic Command and the meetings that he talks
about.
He's
wonderful.
Let's describe him.
I just have the best feeling. And he has guests on that are in, you know, investigating these arcs right now. And different things that are going on. He just has some of the best information, and I just always feel like he can provide a lot if people will go. It's exopolitics, and if they go and check that out, there's just such good information on there. He's one of you know, a lot of people that are really trying to provide information.
Well, you're certainly a prolific writer, because he has this book, Antarctica's Hidden History, and the next time I'm fortunate enough to interview you, but I want to talk about some of that. But the book is by Dr. Michael Sella. He has one about the Galactic Command. Then he has one about why Kennedy was killed. Kennedy's Last Stand is called. And he explains in that book how Kennedy was killed and who killed Kennedy and why. So that's another book. So,
but that's a whole other show.
Yeah, that's, oh, Jesus, is it not? But but he, with exopolitics, so you listen to some of his podcasts. He has hundreds of thousands of people listening on a weekly basis on exopolitics.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
Take it 60 seconds and tell us what's really important about listening to Michael Sella and the guests that he brings to the microphone, to the podcast, to the airwaves. To help us talk about that.
He has a lot of information that is happening right now that he seems to bring it as quickly as he can. And any of these people that provide information, if you're going to listen to something, see how it resonates with your soul, with your life. See what belief level you have when you listen to these things. What approach does he have? Is he approaching from the light? Is he approaching from the dark? You can weed this stuff out pretty quick. He just has a wealth of information, and he's really fun to listen to. So I would suggest everybody, you know, go on there and listen to things that appeal to you, that, you know, that may ring some bells in your head.
Do you, I know you watch Communion, and you talked about that a bit. Have you seen Fire in the Sky with the Walter?
Oh, go, yeah. I just watch him over and over. Yeah, I love Travis. Travis is like me. We're shell-shocked. We had such a horrible experience, you know, several times that it changes your life. And it's changed Travis's life just like it's changed mine. You don't ever get over it.
You can go to Netflix and watch that, Fire in the Sky. That's a true story about a guy who was abducted in the woods with five other guys. But briefly, I think we have about a minute or two left. Take a minute and talk about that for people who want to do some research.
About Travis?
Yes. Or the
book. Yeah, he was taken, he was in a crew out in the woods, and they saw something, and he is the one that went out and looked for it, and he was taken. And he was on a ship for, I think, 5-6 days, and then finally released. And, you know, the movie, they embellish the movie a little, but when Travis is actually speaking, he's just like me. He remembers part of it, and he remembers, you know, just what they didn't erase. And he doesn't have a whole picture either, but he has enough of a picture that he was traumatized enough in his life that it has led him to be a really good speaker. He's very believable. He's honest. And it's a very enjoyable thing to watch for people that might have had something like that happen, because it helps you to kind of be at peace with what's happened to you. Because I know that's the biggest thing. You had something happen. You can't explain it. You don't know who to talk to it about. So if you watch some of these things like Betty and Barney and Travis, it will help you to, you know, unlike Communion, it helps you to deal with what happened to you and kind of be at peace, and then you can kind of start and see what you can remember about your own experience.
Well, Sandy, I tell you, you covered a lot of material, and I think you're going to help a lot of people with the information that you have given us today, and I really appreciate you being on. I think we have about a minute left. Is that right, Don? A minute? 60 seconds? I'm looking at this clock.
Well, I do thank you for having me, and I hope, even if I can help one person, it's worth it, I guess.
Yeah. Do you have a website? Do you have a book? Do you have an email? Well, anybody can get in touch with you? Anything that you want to leave with us?
Well, I have a new book on Amazon, but it's not about this. It is a 612-page book called Neural of Name. It is on Amazon. And Billy and Jane actually asked me to write something on this. And maybe my next book, maybe I'll do that. But right now, I haven't started.
Okay. So if a person were to go to Amazon and look for Sally, I mean, sorry, Sandy Whiteley, W-H-I-T-L-E-Y. They would see you, that book that you had just mentioned. So really appreciate you. I really thank you for being with us and sharing your personal information about your abduction and the things that you have gone through. So 10 seconds left. Thank you for being on BBS Radio. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and thank you. I enjoyed it, too. It's so nice to talk to you again.
All right. Well, God love you.
Merry Christmas to everybody.
All right. Have a good holiday. Bye.